Madison. Oh, it's so good.
Back post, and Payne gives Mark Madison the 1-0 lead. Enjoy this moment, Stephen Payne.
The Pink Men don't quit.
What is up, Flock and friends? This is your host, Rob Chappell, with another edition of Puck and Flock, your full Mingo podcast. With me, as ever, Alex Alvarado. How you doing, Alex?
Great.
Not a bad opening, a home opener.
No, a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. It was a good vibe, right? It was a good vibe. Before we get into that game, got a couple of news items here for you. Sharif J has arrived. He made it.
He was not
in the lineup. He was not on the bench on Saturday. He just got here like on Thursday, I think. Of course, Christian Chaney immediately put it on Instagram that he was here, so it was no longer a secret, but wasn't quite fit for the weekend, but we expect to see him very soon. I wonder, he'll probably get some minutes in the friendly, I would imagine, just to get his legs going a little bit, and then he'll be with us in Lexington in a couple weeks. We'll get to that. The other thing I want to mention is that the city of Madison had a press conference late last week, and I was the only press there, which was disappointing. But the Parks Department is putting futsal courts in 5 city parks. They just opened one. They had an old tennis courts and basketball courts that got taken down because they were just really in bad shape. And in the place of that, they put 2 basketball courts and a futsal court, which on the south side of Madison, which is very cool because it's an easy way for kids to play some soccer. In the time of year when it's nice out, but the grass is still wet, right? So they don't want you on the grass fields. Fort Madison has partnered with this, and they have committed to raise $50,000 each of the next 4 years to support the other 4 futsal courts that are going to go kind of all around the city, especially in sort of minority-dense neighborhoods, which is really cool. And I covered that for Madison 365. And I put it in the Talk of Flock newsletter as well, so take a look at that if you'd like.
Big time, big time. I mean, we need more publicly accessible soccer pitches. We don't have enough.
That's the thing. It's publicly accessible. Anybody can go play anytime they want.
Yeah. There should be no reason that security should be getting called on kids playing soccer.
Right?
It happens all the time.
Right.
All the time, and it's so frustrating. I get very upset about it. So very, very excited for this project to continue to roll out and it's going to be good for the sport, and it's going to be good for the communities that get them.
It's going to be great. Yep. So good on you, Madison Parks Department, and for Madison for being in on that. All right, so let's get into this game a little bit. Without Christian Chaney, he was out injured still. We expect him back soon, but it was Juan Glindres and Derek Ebhard up top, and then everybody else was kind of where we've seen them. All right, Ferdy Sousa and Payne on the wings. Boyce, Villalobos, and Murphy in the middle. Chalaka, Osmond, and Mel across the back. Beautiful night. 3,800 people there for the first home opener. Some were disappointed. Some folks wanted to break 4,000, but I thought it was fine. It was a good crowd. I mean, the second biggest crowd on the weekend in League One was 1,793 at Knoxville. So, like, we destroyed everybody on attendance, which is fine. The beginning of the game was delayed by about 10 minutes because there was a hole in the net. I thought they would have checked that earlier, but some zip ties to the rescue to fix the net up. I don't know what was going on with that. Overall, though, it was a pretty evenly matched affair. We'll get into some stats, but it seems like a draw was kind of the right result here. The overall sentiment after the match among the coaches and players was really disappointment. Like, as you might have heard in the post-game audio from Mitch and from Derek and from Neil Avedy, they just were really not happy with their own performance. What do you think, Alex? Was it as disappointing as they were making it sound like?
You know, you need to have that level of disappointment, right?
And you can't be
okay with nothing more but 3 points.
Yeah.
You know, so, or nothing less than 3 points. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just a good reflection on the character that we have in the team and, you know, where our sights are set and hopes of going forward this season, you know, so.
And it's interesting that they were so disappointed in a game that they actually had to come back to get that point. And they still felt like they should have done more.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, well, I mean, I understand. Like, they feel that they're capable of more, and I would agree. But at the end of the day, right, yeah, we had to fight back and got a good result considering – So there are a lot of things that didn't go our way, yeah, too. So
who stood out for you?
I mean, Derek yeah. Gebhardt, like
in only 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, he was unlocking everything for us up the mm-hmm. pitch, mm-hmm. And when we could get it to him, I think, you know, in the post game talk, the players mentioned, you know, there was focus issues at times, and you know, Mitch said they had a game plan that they didn't stick to.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make the game not transitional, mm-hmm. control the pace of the game, and you know, you could tell that they weren't able to do that, and so again, like that response that they have, it's deserved. You expect more, you want to, but also as we've mentioned, it's hard to come back being a man down. Like right, it's right. difficult.
Yeah,
we did
end up a man down at the end. We'll get to that. But who? What was it that was? Can you point to anything specific that our guys didn't do well to keep that, to control that pace?
Well, the match? Richmond's counter press was really good. So they would lose the ball, and then they were like hounds, you know.
Yeah.
All around the ball, getting stuck in, hard challenges, and we were trying to dribble out. You know,
right.
one or two too many touches.
Mm-hmm.
When you're getting counter-pressed like that, it's got to be quick. You have to move the ball quick.
There were a couple moments where they did some sort of like one-touch passing. And
yeah. It wasn't enough
of that.
Yeah. I mean, like in the second half, we had the new sub-rotation come in, mm-hmm. and immediately, you know, there was a string. Richmond lost the ball in our final third, or in their final third, and mm-hmm. One touch all the way down to the wing. And unfortunately, we couldn't get that final pass.
But that felt more promising.
Yeah, I mean, like that's an example of, I think, what might have been their game plan going forward mm-hmm. into this season and into this game specifically. So it happens, too, with it being the first home game of the season.
Sure.
You know, you have this game plan, you're focused, and then you step onto the pitch and you see the crowd and you feel the energy and you kind of, like, lose a bit of that.
Uh-huh.
It's natural. So if we can just get a response in this next game, we can continue mm-hmm. to move forward and stay undefeated in this league.
Yeah, and that's the hard part now is we got 2 weeks to sit on it, 3 weeks before we play another league match, and that's what Mitch talked about too in the post game. That it's hard to get any momentum going the way this early season schedule has worked out. So we got some goals to talk about. Finally, thank goodness, we have some goals to talk about. So this first goal from Derek Gebhardt was tremendous, I thought. It starts from a throw-in. Michael Chalaka is a throw-in. And Dakota Barnathan was marking Gebhardt, but actually, and the throw-in went to Devin Boyce. And for some reason, Barnathan followed the ball to him, and Gebhardt just lost him and just hit it across the box. So Devin was able to just, with his head, just flick it backwards and right to Derek's feet. Derek picked it up and could have gone direct, right? I mean, he's right at the top of the box with some space. So he could have just taken a shot from there or taken a touch in. But it wasn't quite settled yet when Maxi Schoenfeld got to him. Ended up cutting around Schoenfeld, dribbled almost all the way to the end line, and then cut it back behind Schoenfeld and in front of Barnathan. Like and pass Hara into the far post. It was really threaded needle, and I was like right in front of it, so I could see like that was an incredible finish.
Yeah, he was feeling himself.
Yeah,
you know, I think he's figured out, you know, his place, and
mm-hmm.
The team has figured out his place and how to feed him, and just being back at home, I think for him too, it's like he's used to this pitch, he's used to the situation. Mm-hmm. He had the composure to put in the back of the net,
and a lot of pace to get around.
It was awesome. Too. It was awesome.
Yeah, just a couple of touches to create just enough space, and to cut it back across yourself like that. I don't know. This just looked like a lot of skill to me, like, and a lot of confidence to even try that.
Yep.
Pretty incredible. Now we actually got another chance only like a minute later. It was we were pushing again, and they were able to clear it. Villalobos had some space from about 25 yards, you know, and tried to do a John Murphy goal and put it over, which was fine. Later on, we had a really nicely worked corner kick where Boyce's corner comes all the way across, and then Villalobos one times it. This is obviously designed, but he one times it back across to the near post, and Tommy Mell was trying to tap it in, but just tapped it just wide. So we were having promising chances in the late in the half, and then you give up a goal right before halftime. Like,
it was a banger.
Early contender for goal of the year, right?
It was a banger.
And I did not see it. I was all the other end of the pitch. I was at the sort of the Madison, Ford Madison. I was down by the flock end to get video there, and so I just saw the ball go in, and the League One podcaster group chat blew up, and I was like, "What? What happened?" They're like, "Maxi, what did Maxi just do? Oh my god!" I was like, "I don't know. Was it good? I don't know." It. So looking back on it now, freaking like, what do you even say? I don't even know how you defend this.
No.
We just couldn't quite clear it. That was the problem. Like, it was just bouncing. The ball kept going up and down, and we just could not quite grab it enough to clear it.
Yeah.
I think that was the biggest thing.
One thing about the game of soccer and just in general, set pieces can be so crucial.
Yeah.
It can be so crucial. And there was that period, I would say, in that first half where we couldn't clear the ball, and we kept giving corner kicks, and we were defending them well. And at one point, right, you're going to have a guy who has a moment of class like that. And right. Unfortunate, but a lot of times, you know, set piece goals, they win games, big ones too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're right. We just could not get it clear. And you know, John Murphy did try to head it away, but it fell right to Correa at the top of the box. He just tapped it, but he just kind of rolled it back into Maxi Schoenfeld. He pops it up with his foot off his knee and then bicycles. Like, where does that even come from? Like, what's the audacity to even try that? With his left foot across the goal and I don't know. What do you do? And right before halftime, like you feel like you have momentum going into the break, and then it's gone, and it's level. So starting the second half, Gephardt comes out, and he's okay, it sounds like. But there was an earlier chance before the goal, about 10 minutes before his goal, he had a chance, and he kind of squandered it. It looked like he squandered the chance because he took one too many touches or one too many steps. Turns out at that moment his heel got stepped on. And that's what threw off that chance. And then toward the end of the first half, his Achilles started to swell up. So he thought,
yeah, you don't mess with an Achilles.
Yeah, wisely going to sit the rest of this one out. So Aiden Macias comes in for him. This is that role, that sort of 9-10 role, is one spot where we don't have a lot of depth temporarily, right? We don't have Sharif Jay. We didn't have Christian Chaney. So you put Aiden Macias in that role. It's not the perfect role that he's suited for, but, you know, what do you do? Now, all the way back in the first week,
Aiden did play well, I will say.
He did do well, and he had he had a couple of moments of. He's one of the guys that can actually do the dribbling thing.
Yeah,
pretty well.
Yeah, we got an XTT clip today. So,
oh, did you?
All right.
Look at XTT @XTT Instagram. You got some Aiden Macias there for you. Now, on this second goal for Richmond, all the way back in week one, you said, "I'm going to keep an eye on that left side defending," and. This is what happens. It comes all the way from a goal kick, which is dispiriting. Like, it comes all the way from the back. I'm not sure who it was on the wing for Richmond, but he got it to Boshua. And before that ball was even to Boshua, Bilhart is past Chilaka, just going right past him. Boshua one touch to Bilhart, and Bilhart is free and in behind at the center stripe. Like, this is how high they were. And he takes a couple of touches. Chalaka's chasing him, trying to yank his jersey, trying to, you know,
get anything on it. Yeah,
get anything on it. Mel is trying to get there, doesn't quite make it. Bilhart just a left-footed strike from the outside of the box, and again, it's just Bilhart's got a lot of pace. He's obviously a great.
He was dangerous
player.
Yeah, was a lot was played through him.
Yeah, he had a chance in the first half too that he put just wide.
Yeah,
but yeah, he was kind of the key to unlocking a lot against us. So it's fitting that he got that goal. But again, it was. He caught Michael Chalaka just really flat-footed in that moment.
Yeah, it happens. I don't mean to jinx. I don't mean to jinx at all. Like, and I think again over time, hopefully we can continue to build a little continuity in the back and continue to strengthen those relationships amongst the players to make sure that, you know, something like that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, so then we're down 2-1, and then we make three. Like-for-like subs all at once. You have Jacob Kroll in for Michael Chalaka, Wolfgang Prentice in for Ferdy Sosa on the left wing, and then Agustin Davila in for Juan Galindres. This turns out to be a pretty good set of subs. Like, as you mentioned, like, it just injected some energy and some pace and some and getting back to that game plan, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I had a conversation earlier this week with or earlier last week with Mason Henderson, who's forward with the Badgers men's soccer program. And one thing in discussing, you know, differences between different levels and just the game that's played here in America is, you know, you in college specifically, you can make multiple subs in
right,
a half.
Right.
And sometimes what happens is people make, you know, just one and then another one. And Mason mentioned something that really, like, stuck with me. And it was reflected, I think, especially in this game against Richmond, in that, you know, when you sub players out in pairs or, mm-hmm. you know, in trios, you're able to maintain a little bit of the structure and the playing style because mm-hmm. you have new guys coming in that will have relations. I mean, they've been watching the game. They've been analyzing it on mm-hmm. the sideline. And so they understand, hopefully, right, what space is to play in and mm-hmm. how to take advantage of the opposition. And so with that, too, it's like they all come in together. They've been watching it. They can discuss with the coach, with them amongst themselves. And yeah. They get to play with one another usually, right? Like if you sub them in similar positions, you don't really impact more of the team because two or three of them, you know, they're stepping on the pitch as one.
Right.
Whereas, you know, again, if you only have one guy coming in, it's like you have three or four other players that are around them that have been playing this game for 60, 70 minutes mm-hmm. and understand the flow of it. And this is one new guy coming in with right. new ideas
and fresh,
you know,
legs.
Yeah. Yeah, fresh legs. But it's just harder to make an impact when it's just you mm-hmm. coming on with
right.
with new ideas, get new ideas and whatnot. So
and it's also you can't ignore the fact that it was on the left side. It was like the left back, the left center back, and the left wing back were both substituted together, along with the number nine in Juan Galindres coming out for Augustin Dávila. So like you have a basically like a unit that's mm-hmm. being swapped out, which is really smart, I think, right?
Yeah.
And you saw that pay dividends within a few minutes.
We were right? doing so well down the left.
Yeah. All of a sudden.
And then that opened up the right, and I mean mm-hmm. it's crazy. We were down a man, but we had chances. And actually, we had a goal.
Right, right. Yeah, we weren't down a man yet. That didn't happen until later. But
we had a goal that got called back. So
yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
And that was unfortunate. Right. You know,
that
I
was
think
Jake
that
Kroll.
That was yeah, yeah.
That was yeah. It was rightly called back because it was the whistle went and then he struck it and it went in, and so who knows if the defense or Pablo Jara just stopped playing because they heard the whistle.
Yeah.
So
you kind of want that one. I mean, it was an advantage. It was a foul for us.
Right.
It was our ball.
Right.
And I don't know. I'd take Kroll's shot from top of the box right
yeah,
there,
yeah,
like in,
yeah.
in a moment where, you know, people are scrambling because there's a potential foul. You know,
just take it. Yep. but let's talk about this equalizer goal because it was a beauty, especially the assist. Wolfgang Prentice. By the way, Wolfgang Prentice on the back of his shirt. It just says Wolfgang. Faraday Souza, back of his shirt says Popa. How do we feel about non-last names on backs of shirts? You like it?
I love it. I mean, whatever, like, the players. And, you know, it's like, that's the essence of XCT, right? It's like expression.
Right.
You know, like, give yourself whatever name you want. Do whatever mm-hmm. you want with that. I mean, if it makes you feel good on the pitch, like, go ahead, man. Like,
yeah.
Same with, like, a celebration. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It goes like the old... the original XFL, this is way before your time, but the XFL let everybody put nicknames on the back of their jerseys, which was kind of the coolest thing about it. All right, so anyway, Wolfgang Prentice up the left side. He's running pace for pace. He's got Simon Fitch running step for step with him. And I don't know if you saw it. You can't really see it well on TV, but the team actually, Noah Conless, got really good video from the other side of the pitch, and you can see Wolfgang right in the frame. And he actually, when Fitch caught up with him, he actually popped it in front of Fitch and then ran around behind Fitch to pick it up for himself. And it was just a very, very clever maneuver, really good, really nice bit of skill to unlock that and to get it down to the corner and then at full pace, put a left-footed cross in nice and low and driven. And it wasn't a big looping cross. It was really like a kind of a laser. And then it found Davila's head, and he didn't realize in the moment, I couldn't see how far to the left Dávila was. He was not in the middle of the frame. He was like well off to the left in the 6-yard box. and flicked it with his head, passed himself to the far post, where Hara had no chance at it. Like, that was a really, really classy finish.
Yep.
For a guy who hasn't really shown yet.
No, and we talked about in week one, right? Like, yeah. he didn't have the best game, but at home, it's great to see. You know, at home, yeah. you get a goal, you come on in an important moment. You know, you're expected to make an impact, and yeah, you love to see it.
Well, and you understand too that he's figuring it out here. He's yeah. never played in the United States before. He's used to a Central American style. You know, he's getting his legs. He's getting used to a new group, a new community, a new style of play. So, I'm feeling more optimistic about him than I have in the past, because he was, and beyond just that, he had another couple other chances too that, and he really played well in those last however many 20 minutes that he had, so that was great. Right after the goal, Matt said something to the official. Let's go back to this, because Matt got his yellow card earlier in the second half when Devin Boyce took an elbow to the face and there was no call.
Yeah.
And in the forward club after the match, Devin was still bleeding
yeah, he was.
Out of his nose, and there was no card, no call, no foul, nothing. So Matt took exception to that, got a yellow card, and then right after our goal, I don't know what he said in that moment, but he got asked to leave. He got a red card. After spending the whole off season saying, I have to be more composed.
Hey, you got to stand up for the guys. Like, when you get like in the second one, who knows what was said or what happened, but
right.
that first one, I mean, yeah, it was a missed call, and it, like, what if Devin has a concussion? What if he has to get subbed out? What if there's like a, you know?
It wasn't even like a play on the ball or whatever. It's like, this is a player safety thing.
Yeah.
Like, you got to call that. Yeah. You absolutely have to. And the AR saw it. Like, you could make the argument that Devin's back was to the center official, but the AR was looking right at it and mm-hmm. didn't say a word. So that was a bad call. And so, you know, Matt expresses himself and gets the yellow and then gets another one after that goal. I don't know what he said after that. But then we lose Timmy Mell also in the 86th. He fouled. It was a questionable foul. I don't know. It was a shoulder to shoulder. And Maxie went down. So he got a call for a foul. And then immediately kicked the ball out of bounds or kicked it up in the air. And you can make the argument that he was already like in the motion of kicking the ball when the whistle went. But you kick a ball away after the play is blown dead, you get a yellow card. And that was the second one. I felt like it was really harsh.
Yeah,
I feel like they could appeal that one, maybe.
The hate to be critical of officials, but I think the ref lost the match at one point in that game, with like 25 minutes left.
Yep, exactly.
30 minutes left.
Yeah, sorry for not going in chronological order here, folks, but this, about 10 minutes before Timmy's red card, there was like a kind of a fight almost.
Yeah.
And all he gave was two yellow cards.
Yeah. So,
like, he kind of lost control of the match in the last 20 minutes or so. You're absolutely right. So the question now is, Timmy and Matt, if those red cards are upheld, will miss their next match. The question is, do they miss their next league match, or do they miss their next match? Because their next match is the Jägermeister Cup match at Lexington, and then after that we're home to Greenville. So which of those, like, is the cup separate for disciplinary purposes?
It's a great question.
I emailed the league this morning, have not heard back. So we'll let you know if we find out. Now if you look at the stats of this match, as I mentioned before, like, a draw in this match is probably the right result, honestly. If you look at all the stats, very, very even. Like, the possession is like closer than a Wisconsin presidential election, 50.3 to 49.7 in favor of Richmond. Richmond completed 419 passes. We had 415. Our passing accuracy was 74%, which is low for us, frankly. Theirs is 75. We had 14 shots, 5 on target. They had 12 shots, 4 on target. Maybe my favorite stat for us was we had 10 shots inside the box and only 4 outside. Against Chicago, it was 9-1, outside to inside. So that's much more the ratio that you want to see. And at the end of the day, we remain unbeaten. We have 6 points from 4 matches. If you look at it from a points per game standpoint, we're in 5th place. You have to do points per game right now because, like, Omaha had a month off. They just played their second game. But anyway, I'm feeling, you know, you got to feel okay about it. We look ahead now to Saturday. We'll have a friendly against UW. I don't think we're going to cover that. We'll have something for you next week, but probably not in-depth coverage of the UW friendly. And then we're, as I mentioned, we're away at Lexington for the Jägermeister Cup. That's on Sunday, April 28th, 3 p.m. start for that one. And then we're back home to face Greenville back in league play. So overall impressions, as you mentioned, like we're feeling kind of okay about that, right?
Yeah. We got a little break here and hope to get something going forward.
Speaking of breaks, we're going to take one right now. When we come back, Wolfgang Prentice.
What's up, everybody? This is the star host of Out of the Box Podcast. My podcast is a platform for advocacy, raising awareness about the challenges faced by former inmates and promoting the idea that everybody deserves a second chance. It's my invitation to you to become a part of the movement towards positive change. And I'm excited to tell you it's the newest member of the 365 Media Network of podcasts. We'll have new episodes every other Thursday, so be sure to watch madison365.org/podcast for new episodes, or subscribe to Out of the Box Podcast on all your favorite podcast apps. I'm D-Star. Until next time, guys.
And we're back, and I have magically transported myself from the Talking Fox studio down to the Forward Club to meet with Wolfgang Prentice. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being with us today. We are very, very happy. We're very excited to have you back in Madison. It was very rude of Oakland to take you back last year after you scored, you get a goal, and then they're like, oh, come back. So we'll talk about that. But we want to just let folks kind of get to know you a little bit and where you come from. You're from Southern California.
Yeah, Southern California, a little town called Redondo Beach, pretty cool beach town. And yeah, I've lived there my whole life, so.
Yeah, and what was your soccer journey growing up there? What was the soccer scene? And that's kind of like L.A. area, right?
Yeah. So California, I feel like the pool is honestly like really big, really competitive, like when it comes to like soccer. So I feel like I've always had pretty competitive soccer out there. I played in academy for 4 years.
Okay.
I played for a club called Patiadores for a couple of years, and then I played for a club called Real SoCal for a couple of years too.
And at what point did you realize that, okay, I'm pretty good at this, I could actually do this for a living?
I think it hit like my first year of academy. I got called up to the U15 national team.
Okay.
Which was pretty cool.
That would be a validation.
Yeah. So I was like, I think I could definitely make something of this if I just keep going at it. And so,
So then you get to be like 17, 18, and you end up going to the college route, the Cal State Northridge. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment where you have to kind of choose academy, club, pro versus college, and what was the thought process there?
I think it was kind of tough, but I mean, I always kind of wanted to make sure I had high school finished, and it was pretty easy to get into the college route because the technical director of the last academy I was at before I went to college at Real SoCal, he was also the head coach at Cal State Northridge.
Oh.
So it was a pretty easy like transfer over.
We hear this a lot. The soccer world is kind of a small world.
And yeah.
You know a coach, and you can stick with that coach wherever they go or whatever. That's cool. And you were there, what, two years?
I was there for 2 seasons, yes.
Now, it seems like you had a bit of a rough patch 2019 to 21 or so. You got trials with Orange County. I'm sorry. You played in USL 2 for a bit, right?
Yeah, I played with, what are they called, Los Angeles Force now or something.
Oh, right,
like
right,
that.
Yeah.
I played with them for a little bit. That was definitely like a weird period because I was on trial of different teams and then COVID happened.
Right.
I had the little stint with Galaxy 2 for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Had interest, was possibly signing, but then COVID hit and that kind of ruined things.
Right, and you had trials with Orange County and Cosmos, I think, right?
Yeah, and Cosmos too.
Yeah, and then COVID happens, right? Mm-hmm. And like everything's like... What was that period of time like where you got a couple years there where it was like, was there any doubt? Like maybe this isn't going to work for me or?
No, I don't think I ever had any doubt myself. I think it was just a period of just like when, you know, I think at the point, if you ever start giving up at any point, then you're never going to get there. So, I mean, I think it was just keep believing in myself. I think I always had belief something would happen eventually. I didn't know at what level necessarily to start out.
Or where or when.
But
right,
I mean,
right. But you knew it was going to.
Yeah.
You felt that. So then, now tell us about Oakland. How did you land it with Oakland roots?
Yeah, so previously I was playing on a NISA team. They're called
San Diego 1904.
Yeah, yeah. I played with them for a season.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was that like? I mean, we like to, us USL people, like to kind of bag on NISA for being like disorganized and bad. But what was the player like?
I mean, it's definitely,
what was the player experience like?
It's definitely something. I mean, it's not. I want to say this. It's the
it
most.
Sure, like, is something.
I want to say it's necessarily the most like ideal situation, but I think for a guy like me who just need to get on a team,
yeah,
and just like kind of try and get my name out there and get some,
sure,
film, you know, I didn't honestly think it was that bad of a route because I mean I was getting playing time.
Right. And like I said, like film and getting to know more people and network and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that it's Oakland. So how do you get to Oakland?
Yeah, I was actually in like a open combine thing which is actually my agency now. They're called AX, like soccer tours.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of just like have combines and stuff. And the head coach was there and I performed well. And they're like, yeah, like we like you and we want to take you out to preseason.
Uh-huh.
So then I was with them for the whole month and they ended up liking me and then they ended up signing me. So, yeah.
And then you've been loaned out a few times now. So this is, and maybe this is not as unusual as I think it is, but it strikes me as a little bit unusual that a championship level club has made a commitment. Mm-hmm. To develop you,
yeah,
and they've partnered with other clubs to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they see you as a long-term thing with Oakland, right?
Yeah.
That's the sense you get,
mm-hmm,
which is great. And they led you to North Colorado for a season and then Madison for like 9 games and then rudely snatch you back. And now you're here.
Yeah.
So tell us about that process. Do you have a say in that process or do they just say, here's your ticket, you're flying to Madison?
I mean, I think it's like kind of mutual because, mm-hmm, I mean, I'm at the point in my career where I just feel like getting first team minutes and just getting as much playing as I can is really, really helpful for me.
Yeah.
I think I'm at the point where I need to play like in order, mm-hmm, to develop. Because, I mean, I feel like you can only do so much doing training. And, I mean,
right,
I need that next step of getting play time and,
yep,
learning within the game what else I can do to improve my game.
Yeah. So is there a conversation with your coaching staff or with, like, the front office in Oakland to say, hey, we have this opportunity for you to go to Madison. What do you think? Or do you have a couple different loan options that you're presented? Or?
Yeah, I think usually there's some teams there,
yeah,
that are interested. I think this past season they had some interest from Spokane as well, like the new team.
Oh, okay.
In, yep, USL.
Yep.
But I mean, I always kind of liked Madison, especially from my short stint with, mm-hmm, them last year. Because I mean, I just like the city and I like all the coaches and,
yeah,
I like the way like they played, and so.
And what's the, I've not been to a Roots game, but what's the environment like? It was a home game in Oakland versus a home game in Madison.
The Roots games are honestly pretty cool. I mean,
yeah,
they definitely have a similar vibe like to here, like the crowd, like they're pretty,
mm-hmm,
really into the team.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I think everything's cool. Like the training setup there is really cool. It's the old Raiders facility, so it's a really nice like grass field. And
nice.
I have like all like the weights and stuff.
Oh, nice.
And I have like everything there. Like it's super like professional. Like it's super
cool.
Nice.
That's cool. Is that one of the main differences between USL League One versus Championship? Is just like kind of amenities?
Yeah, but I mean, I think honestly, like it honestly depends on like which team. I feel like
I suppose.
I think everything's just so skewed sometimes.
Yeah. What about the level of talent, level of competition? Is it noticeably different?
I wouldn't say it's like that different. I think it's just like from team to team. You probably have some teams in League One that could play in Championship.
Sure.
You probably have, yeah, teams in Championship that probably deserve to play in League One. You know.
So there's our case for promotion and relegation in the United States.
Yeah, I think 100% that should happen. I think it would, USL would overtake MLS if they added that.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I just think more people would get into it because there's stakes on the line. I feel,
mm-hmm,
like people like that bit of excitement to the game.
Well, what I like is that there is excitement. There would be excitement for games between at the bottom of the table at,
yeah,
the end of the season, right? Like that's what's cool about,
yeah,
European football, I think. So you came in and obviously made a massive impact on this past match,
mm-hmm,
with that assist to Augustin. Can you talk us through that that sequence when you're cruising up the left side and you got Simon Fitch in your pocket and how you did a very clever little maneuver to get around him? Is that, are you thinking that through or was that like instinctive? My feet just did that.
I think it was definitely instinct for sure. I feel like a lot of the times when probably one of my strong suits is like going at players 1v1. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it's just kind of instincts and kind of just try and see their hips and like see what they're giving me, and I kind of just try and make advantage of it. I mean,
right. Yeah, yeah. If you're thinking about it, it just takes too long, right?
Yeah.
Like you lose the moment, right? We hear that a lot from guys. I think Zemo said that to us last year, that like they'll score a goal and they'd be like, wow, that was impressive.
Yeah.
I wonder how that happened. but then the cross in was, I mean, were you looking for Augustine at that point, or were you just trying to get it in front of the goal?
I kind of like know like my like few spots where like I try and hit like in my head. So like as soon as like as I have that little hint of separation, I try and hit the ball. There's usually like a few spots I think in my head, and I'm hoping players are trying to get to that spot. And Augustine was there, and yeah, it was good.
No, is that part of why like team chemistry and team gelling is so important? That like you yeah. know where the ball's going to go, and you kind of trust that one of your guys is going to be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, 100%.
And he knew
yeah.
that he knew where you were going to put the ball probably. And that was a nice finish from him, though, too.
Yeah, right? He's a great header, yeah.
Now, you, I was talking with my co-host earlier in the show here about the back of your jersey says Wolfgang. What was the, did you have to ask permission for that? Or is that,
I did. I don't know if it was, because I know it's like more of a formality to put the last name. But like everyone was telling me over offseason, they're like, yeah, like having the first name would be like so sick because like your name's Wolfgang.
Like you can't just leave that alone, right?
So then I asked Paul, and he's like, I think you should be able to. So
there's no league rules against it or anything?
I don't think so.
Apparently
not.
You
haven't technically put whatever name you want.
I know Sosa has a different, like a nickname on the back, right?
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
I mostly just did it like for the formality, especially like at like Champ. I kind of asked, they're like, well, it's kind of more of like a formality. Like if you put like the last name, looks a little more professional.
Right. All right. Well, but it's League One. It's fun, right? It's
Madison. Yeah.
It's for Madison. The slogan literally is playing soccer, having fun with it.
I feel like as long as I'm playing well and have the first name, you know, I have to back
that's
it up.
Right,
you
that's
know?
Right. That's 100%
true. If I'm going to have the flashy name, I got to have to back it up, you know?
you have to live up to the name Wolfgang.
Yeah.
I think, right? Did you ever feel that? Like, okay, I have a soccer dad. I know, like, every soccer team has, like, three Ians and two Ethans. Whatever. There were probably not many Wolfies on your soccer teams growing up.
Definitely not. I might be maybe one of the few in the United States that have the name Wolfgang.
Is it a family name or something, or is it just your parents are cool?
Well, my dad's a musician, so it's like music, and so they just thought the name was cool.
Okay.
So.
All right. I'm going to start calling you Amadeus or something.
All right. Puck too.
I know you got to get to training, but I'll let you go. But I really appreciate your time today.
Appreciate you for having me.
All right, best of luck. Go forward.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, let's take a quick look around the league now. Two games starting the weekend on Friday. Knoxville hosting Omaha. Union Omaha finally play their second league match and get a 1-0 win. Knoxville started out looking really promising, had a little bit of bad luck and some really great goalkeeping from Rashid Nuhu, keep them off the board. Steven Dos Santos did get the lone goal in the 70th minute. Really fantastic solo effort, taking a ball off his chest with his back to the goal, turning, hammering it from about 25 yards. Former Mingo, Jalen Chrysler, got a straight red for this one. A kind of soft one, an arm to the face of Misael Rodriguez, but questionable call, I think. And in Charlotte, the Independents got a 1-0 win over Greenville. Greenville did have a chance early on in this one, thanks to a handball in the box. But Austin Pack, the Charlotte goalkeeper, once again proves himself one of the better keepers in this league, saves the penalty on Lyon McKinnon to keep it 0-0. And then a few minutes after halftime, Juan Carlos Obregon gets the winner for Charlotte, getting his head on the end of a lovely ball in from Joel Johnson. Saturday, after our match in the USL League One After Dark over on the West Coast, it's Chattanooga 4, Central Valley Fuego 2. Ropapa Mensa gets his first career hat trick, and he was involved in all four goals. And he also could have had another one. He hit the post in the 20th minute. Mensa opened the scoring in the 14th. Clever little chip over Carlos Avalez, who had come off his line. 4 minutes later, he gets an assist and a really nice back heel to Lucas Coutinho, who scored from about 18 yards out. Zahir Vasquez did get one back on a rebound of his own shot for Fuego. Then Mensa gets his second in the 65th. A nice through ball from Stefan Lukic. Then Kudus Lawal taps in a nice cross for Fuego in the 80th to keep him in it. At that point, it's 3-2 with about 10 minutes to play. But then Mensa sealed the deal with a penalty conversion in the 91st. I will say, Central Valley Fuego actually will feel hard done by on this one. They had a ton of really good chances. A couple went just wide, and TJ Bush had some miraculous saves to keep Chattanooga in the lead here. And on Sunday, it's Lexington and Spokane drawing 2-2 in Lexington. All four goals in this one come in a span of about 18 minutes in the first half. Ahmed Longmire opens the scoring for Spokane in the 19th. On an open header from a corner is just way too easy if you're a Lexington fan. He was left all alone at the back post. Yannick Yankum answered for Lexington in the 26th on a combination of some really good one-touch passing from Lexington and some very questionable defending from Spokane. Then the host actually took the lead in the 34th. Incredible solo effort from Azad Liadi. Finished it up with a nutmeg of the keeper. Kind of embarrassing, but to put Lexington ahead 2-1. And then just 3 minutes later, Luis Hill hammered one from 36 yards away. We know it's 36 yards because they're playing on a football field, so you can see the yard lines. Amal Knight got his hands to it, but just kind of made a meal of it. It did take a funky little hop off the turf, but he still was there and got his hands on it and made a meal of it, and it went in for the equalizer, and that was the final goal in a 2-2 draw. And Lexington now, really the odds-on favorite to win this whole thing in the preseason, given the talent that they signed, has not won a match since opening day. And they have just 4 points from their first 5 games. And that brings us to stoppage time. Alex, what do you got?
Yeah. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, for stoppage time today, I'd like to mention we got a little clip from Aiden Macias that was posted earlier today. It's Monday, so if you're hearing this on Tuesday, it was yesterday. But he had a nice little skill move that was awesome. So we put together a little clip and we uploaded it, and shout out Aiden for liking it and nice. Taking part, man. It was awesome. So nice. Looking forward to being at the rest of the games and capturing some more moments like this. Yeah. So
at @XTT_608
yep.
on Instagram. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. My stoppage time is you get hungry during games, and the food at Bree Stevens Field has come into some criticism in the past. The cheese curds get cold. The burgers are pretty basic. The pizza's pretty basic. So we've got some new options this year in the east end of the stadium. The west end of the stadium is just the grill. You get your hot dogs, your burgers there. That's all great. On the east end of the stadium, behind the flock end, they have the nachos, the loaded nachos, which are not new. Those were here last year. They're very good. 3 new food stands this year. Walk This Way. It's a pun. It's walk, W-O-K. It has rice bowls with shrimp, chicken, or vegetable. Stallone's Italian Beef or sausage or both. I had an Italian sausage with peppers. It was spot on. It was really, really good. And then tamales. Beef, chicken, or green chili and corn tamales. I'm always a little bit skeptical of tamales. I don't know. We make tamales for Christmas every year. My whole family, it's a whole big thing we do, either in San Diego or here. So we have all year actual homemade tamales. So I'm always skeptical of going to a sporting event and getting tamales. But I don't know. You got a tamale family?
Yeah. I think personally, I'm Mexican. But I will say that tamales, you got to get the salsa ratio right.
It's key, right?
You got to get the salsa. It's hard. It's hard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm also a bit skeptical at times. I didn't make the choice.
Next time, I think May 4th versus Greenville, I will try a couple of tamales. It's only $5.
So I thought about it. I just didn't see a side of salsa as an option. So I was just in case. I didn't have the protection on the back end.
Should we bring some salsa? I've been chipping in with tamales with my wife's family for almost 20 years now, and my job is to tie the strings. That's I've never been promoted from string tire, so it's a very complex process. It's very it's very delicate process. So we'll try the tamales, and we'll let you know in a couple of weeks. Okay. All right, folks, that's all we have for you tonight. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon.